You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Across the state of Wisconsin, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie is back.
It's 8:06 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Boy, oh boy, hopefully you paid attention to the forecast. You grabbed the umbrella. Your windshield wipers are working today if you're in the car, because large chunks of the state are going to see a whole lot of rain. And then, of course, as you go north into the state, into the Wausau and beyond area, now then you're just talking a whole lot of ice as this system moves through. In your area, Brian, you're going to see some potential severe weather.
Storms. Yeah. Yep, some tornadic activity is what they said. But in Madison, they're saying it between 9 and 11, it could snow again. So that's going to be fun.
Yay!
Parker, like, I have to go back out.
Yes.
It's supposed to. So it's raining now in Madison.
It's really raining.
It's going to snow, according to the National Weather Service, from 9 to 11. There's a chance of snow. And that's a 75% chance of snow. So that's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
And then it's going to start raining again. And then you'll finally get a break at 8 p.m. So buckle up,
weather
friends.
Whiplash.
It's going to be a horrible day.
I love it.
Just a horrible day. High of in the 60s today, and then Friday and Saturday in the
Weird.
50s. Hey, guess what? It's going to rain Friday and Saturday too.
Can't wait.
When you put on your little Easter bonnets and go out on
your
Sunday,
Crocs.
It'll be 48 and partly sunny. So.
All right. Well, it's going to be a little chilly for the summer-like frock, so make sure you have a sweater that goes over the top of them.
Well, now you're going to tell people how to dress.
I am.
And man, you are in full mom mode.
I'm worried about people's safety this morning.
Wow. I am a let's thin the herd. I'm a survival of the fittest kind of guy this morning. It's like, I want everybody to be okay, but if you're not, that's on you.
Yeah, that's
personal
true.
Responsibility. All right, let's look to the Middle East because it's time for some war headlines, which are basically becoming all the same. But let's start with this one because last night, if you listened to the president or listened to our breakdown of what the president had to say, he used familiar talking points in his first address to the nation on the Iran war, telling Americans the conflict is, quote, nearing completion and projecting another 2 to 3 weeks of involvement. He signaled the U.S. prepared to intensify its military response and threatened to take Iran back to the Stone Ages. There's only one Stone Age.
That's right.
He said ages. That's okay.
In other headlines, Iran's military dismissed the president's claims that 4 weeks of attacks have left it weakened. Following the powerful and unimaginable blows you have already received, expect even more crushing, more extensive, and destructive action from us, Iran's military said in a statement. This doesn't seem like a country who's giving up and is depleted like the president continues to tell me that they are.
No, and they're also buoyed by the fact that nobody else, except for Israel, nobody else bought into this.
Right.
It's like, all right, you want to come after. And I'm no fan of Iran.
No.
But this was a major miscalculation on the part of this administration to think they would just roll over and acquiesce to his demands.
Mm-hmm.
They're not. They won't do it. They never have done it. And there's no indication that they're going to do it now. And he could keep saying till the cows come home that we're winning and that he's going to make the decision when it ends. That's not going to happen.
It's not how war works.
No. And sometimes you do have an enemy that is going to at some point capitulate. I don't see that happening with Iran. Their bench is deep.
They've never capitulated. That's why they've been such a problem for so many years, because they've never capitulated and they've never been a country who has been like, let's sit down and negotiate and talk this out, which is why you have to be more strategic in you know, your military endeavors with this country.
Well, that's why you don't send your son-in-law to negotiate.
This is also true.
Professionals. Israeli defense has intercepted Iranian missiles on the first night of Passover, and in Lebanon, Israeli attacks killed at least 50 people within 24 hours, according to health officials there. So no end in sight for this. If you think it's going to be 2 to 3 weeks, good. I'm glad you can comfort yourself with that thought. I'd be happy to throw some money down that it's not going to be in 3 weeks. We're going to be into month 3. You know, and it'll keep going. because no matter how much you bomb them, they are going to keep coming back.
Did you think it was interesting? And we've talked about this before, because Pete Hegseth has also insinuated some of the same things the president did, especially about the regime and the new Ayatollah, that they are depleted, that they are on basically their very last leg as far as a regime goes. I don't. My feeling is that's not true. Obviously, I don't have the intelligence, but my feeling is that's not true. This is a regime that isn't super public most of the time. And so I think it's dangerous to make that sort of speculation when I'm not sure that this administration knows either for sure.
This administration doesn't care if they know if they have facts or not, or we wouldn't have been in this war. But the former Ayatollah, the one that is confirmed dead, he didn't make public appearances either.
No.
That's what they do. They stay, their leadership stays hidden because they know they are on, they're wanted. They're, you know, people are looking to kill them. So they stay hidden. And Whiskey Pete just wants to cosplay. He loves to stand up there and talk tough and throw around all these things and make it seem like he is aroused when he's talking about that. He gives off that energy of somebody who's describing their latest conquest or their trip to Vegas or whatever. He's not a serious man. This administration is not serious. And they have made a major miscalculation, as I said, on this enemy. And it's going to be long and drawn out, which is why longtime advocates and longtime supporters of this president and the MAGA policy are like, what they're like, hold on, you promised this was not the thing.
Yeah.
You promised.
Campaigned
and they
on
don't
it.
Care. They can be fooled about the economy. They can be fooled about the Epstein files. All of that they're willing to swallow. But the America First, no long-term wars thing is, for whatever reason, sticking in their craw, and this is going to be his downfall.
Well, and I think that's what I continue to go back to during the presidential campaign, and Trump did it against Hillary, and he also did it against Kamala Harris, where he called them the warmongers. If you vote for them, you're going to end up in some sort of long-term war.
Your sons and daughters will be sent off to kill or to die in foreign soil.
And here we are. I mean, here we are after, weeks of this, and there's still no end sight. And it turns out that, a lot of the time what this administration says about other people turns out to be what they're actually projecting about themselves. And we're living through that right this very moment.
Well, as you know, Jamie, we are on Across the State of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Network. A lot of things to talk about in Wisconsin and a lot of stuff you need to know, Parker.
It's a wake-up call in more ways than one. Time for some you need to know.
All right. Well, this is an all Wisconsin-based blank you need to know. I almost said it. It almost came out of my mouth. That would not have been good. So U.S. immigration changes mean less money for Green Bay schools a year and a half into Trump's term. A longer-term change may be hitting Wisconsin school districts, one with direct financial consequences. The Green Bay School District is facing a budget deficit of $8 million for next year, 2026-27, and $24 million to $32 million for the following year, 2027-28. Part of the reason for that deficit is because schools are funded on a per-pupil basis, and enrollment has been declining for years. Now, there's a lot of reasons for declining enrollment. Not as many kids, none of this. But one of the big reasons is the immigrant community in Green Bay and the surrounding areas is shrinking. District Superintendent Vicki Bayer said Green Bay welcomes a lot of new immigrants, and we're just not seeing those numbers right now. Gee, I wonder why. So, pardon me, if you don't have kids coming with their immigrant families and they're not going to school, suddenly when your enrollment is checked and funding is up, you're going to go, well, you guys don't need as much money because you don't have as many kids. Now, there's no real data as to how many of the children that are missing came from immigrant families. We do know that there's been a decline in enrollment in the Green Bay School District, and they're looking for that. But that's one of the main reasons. And just a reminder that every child, regardless of citizenship status, is entitled to free public education under the 14th Amendment. And that was ruled by the Supreme Court in 1982. And I can hear some of you already,
I don't want my tax dollars going to pay for some illegal going to school.
Well, sorry, that's the way it is in this country for now. And you can fight it if you want.
So what you're saying is there's more to this birthright citizenship case in front of the Supreme Court than just birthright citizenship. We just named the 14th Amendment again, which is the heart of this argument in front of the Supreme Court.
Listen, why do you always want to put reason to the unreasonable?
I'm weird
now,
that way.
Green Bay is not tracking students' immigration status. They don't know. But the Census Bureau shows net international migration to both Wisconsin and Brown County dropped significantly between 24 and 25. And if you're somebody who's looking to move from your country, or whether if you legally just want to move, or if you're trying to get into this country, this is not the place to come anymore. And it's showing up, and it will have long-term effects on the school district.
I mean,
what else we got?
I was just going to say very quickly, if it's per pupil too, think about that. You're losing students. That's fewer resources, fewer programs, and tougher decisions about staffing and class sizes. So something else to consider. But yes, very quickly, Governor Evers is calling out President Donald Trump and using some harsh language. I like spicy Tony. This is fun. But obviously, the president signed that order to restrict absentee ballots from going to people not vetted by his administration. And Tony Evers calls it BS, using the actual words, which I cannot, and I wish I could, because it's great.
Spicy Tony.
Right, and he looks forward to seeing the president in court, is what Governor Evers says. On Monday, Trump signed that executive order titled Ensuring Citizenship Verification and Integrity in Federal Elections, which instructs the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and Social Security Administration to send election officials to states just like Wisconsin and list individuals. Individuals confirmed to be United States citizens who will be old enough to vote before upcoming federal elections. Now, this order also requires U.S. Postal Service, out of money, by the way, to prevent mail-in ballots from being sent to anyone not on the list. Components of this order are similar to provisions in that SAVE Act, which the Republicans are trying to pass. The U.S. House passed that bill in February. It's currently stalled in the Senate. Now, soon after the president's order was signed, Evers called the order BS in a social media post saying it's illegal and we'll see the president in court. Now, we've talked about him a lot this morning, but Josh Call, Wisconsin's attorney general, said the order transparently attacks our democracy, restricts voting, and tramples on the Constitution. Quote, I am confident that key parts of the executive order will be blocked, and that is accordingly, and that it accordingly won't prevent us from continuing to have free and fair elections in Wisconsin. Good for Tony for saying the words.
Yeah, it's this proclamation, this list that he wants everybody on a list, and you have to then the list has to be vetted by so many different agencies, and it's all a load of garbage because he votes by mail. Don't ever forget this. He votes by mail. His family votes by mail. Don't let him convince you that there is fraud in mail-in elections. There is not fraud in mail-in or in our elections in general.
No.
Minuscule.
No.
Minuscule.
Less than 1%.
This is Daybreak. I'm Brian Newman.
I'm Jamie Martinson. You are listening to the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Solid, better than expected. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:22 right now. Good morning, and thank you so much for joining us today. This is the Civic Media Network, and my name is Jamie Martinson.
Good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. This is, well, if you listened to the president last night, you know we have lots of oil. We have the most crude. People should just come to us to buy oil because we got oil everywhere. We got oil coming out of our pores, out of our back. We got oil everywhere.
Never mind those high gas prices. We are covered.
Yeah, see, that's the problem, because the price of diesel fuel has been skyrocketing.
Yeah.
And it didn't skyrocket before the war started, so correlation, causation, I don't know. You can draw your own conclusions. But because of that, a lot of businesses that use trucks are having to pay a lot more. And if you think that that's not going to get passed on to you, if it hasn't been passed on to you already, you don't know how this works. And that's okay, because we'll try to help you know how it works. Wisconsin is known as the dairy state, Jamie. Dairy consists of milk. Milk is transported in what?
Trucks.
Giant tanker trucks. That's right. Something I didn't know about Wisconsin, but I do now, is that there are some roads that they have weight limits on, especially in the rural part of this state, which makes sense. Okay, well, that just means trucks have to make more than one trip.
Yes.
So a fully loaded tanker of milk may be too heavy for some roads, so they have to go half a tank.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but they still need to deliver a full tank, so they got to go back and get another tank. So now you're using more diesel fuel, which, have I mentioned, price has skyrocketed. Mm-hmm. The average price, for example, in the Midwest of diesel is $5.10 a gallon.
Wow.
Now, that was that's $1.31 higher than before the Tangerine Tyrant decided he was going to start a war. So, again, we were told we have all this crude oil that makes diesel fuel, and, well, we don't. So, there's a lot of concern, growing concern, as there should be, because we will start paying more for all of this.
Are you telling me that what he told me last night was not true? Is that what you're telling me
right
now?
I would not tell you that. It's not my job to tell you. My job is to give you the facts and trust in your own intelligence to come up with a reasonable conclusion.
That's fair.
If you conclude that he was full of gas and not the kind that he's saying we have and just lying to you straight out, I might argue that that's a very apt conclusion.
Yes. Okay, there we go. Well, here's the problem.
But it's up to you.
Okay, that's fair. Here's the problem that we're going to see with these trucks having to make more trips. That's going to include higher costs for them. And at some point, kind of like tariffs, that price has to get passed on somewhere. It turns out that we are going to have to pay higher prices because those companies, those milk farms, any truck, really, who has goods crossing through the state right now or in the country are probably going to end up charging more because at some point they have to offset their own costs.
Right.
Doesn't matter where you're at in the state, you're going to end up paying more because of this. That's just how it goes up. Groceries get higher. Any goods that you're buying are going to get higher. Anything tied to transportation, turns out, is going to increase in price. That's
how
it works.
And once again, Jamie, not telling you that you were lied to last night, but according to Gas Buddy, according to Gas Buddy, while diesel is expensive here in the Midwest, it's even more expensive on the coastal states. And you may say, well, why would that be, Brian? Well, despite statements to the contrary, coastal states rely on overseas oil for their diesel fuel, which diesel is produced in a much lower quantity than gasoline, as is jet fuel, which is why you're seeing your airline tickets go up. But yes, contrary to popular belief, or one person's belief, connections to the global oil market are very, very essential to the United States.
I mean, I am very concerned about the farming industry right now, just for multiple reasons. But I don't know if you've noticed, but it's spring. This happens to be a really busy time for the farming community in Wisconsin and across the nation. What does this do to them with diesel prices going up when tractors, trucks, anything that they need to use on the farm mostly runs on diesel? How does this affect them, their bottom line? They're already usually on very thin margins as far as profit and loss. How does this affect them on a day-to-day basis? And this is a big concern for a state like Wisconsin that relies on their rural industry so much.
It's it's going to be rough. And not only Gas Buddy, but other economists have said that these fuel costs will be passed on, most likely. So will be passed on to consumers across all sorts of industries, which will then lead to a resurgence of inflation in the coming months. Once again, going against the, we have the strongest economy, we're the hottest nation in the world, da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, we're going to be hot because nobody will be able to afford to run their air conditioners this summer.
Yeah.
That's one way we'll be hot. It all comes back, and it's so easy to disprove. You look at, all you have to do is look at the numbers and listen to people who aren't politically aligned. You know,
right.
They're economists, they're fuel experts, they're this, they're that. Whatever they are, they're looking at the numbers and they're laying it out for us.
Yeah.
And it's not good, and it's contrary to everything we're being told.
And it's not good, and even if you don't want to listen to them because you're busy and you don't have time to listen to the words they have to say, we said it earlier today, but we'll say it again. Check your own credit card receipts. Check your own bank account. Check the receipt that you get from your local grocery store and what is happening when you go to the grocery store just to buy your staples.
Yeah, I didn't. I went yesterday. I did not buy. I didn't splurge by any stretch. And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
I got some bread, some apples, a little bit of vegetables, some lunch meat. And I'm like, that much? And it's in a bag and a half?
Yeah.
That's it?
Yeah.
Oh, well. Hey, some opioid news in Wisconsin. Could be good. Could be bad. We'll tell you on the other side. It's Daybreak. I'm Brian Noonan.
I'm Jamie Martinson. You are listening to the Civic Media Network.
Local news, community stories, and the conversations that matter most. Now, more Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Thank you so much for having us on this morning. It is 8:35 right now. If you are listening in Richland Center on WRCE or in Wisconsin Rapids on WFHR or in Wausau on WXCO, thank you so much for joining us. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. Alarming statistics from the Department of Health and Human Services. Between 2016 and 2023, over 9,000 people in Wisconsin died as a result of an opioid overdose. Good news is, though, in 2024, Wisconsin had one of the sharpest declines of any state in opioid deaths. That's from a new report by Vital Strategies, a nonprofit organization. The decrease came in part from the fact that Wisconsin prisons and county jails have expanded access to medications for opioid use disorder over the last 5 years. There are still gaps in the program, however, and we are joined by Jason Stein. He's the president of Wisconsin Policy Forum, and Andy Tisdale, a researcher at Wisconsin Policy Forum. They just put out a new piece, Treatment Behind Bars. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. We're glad you're here. This is the numbers were fascinating and a little astounding. But Jason, what's the evolution of and what brought about the evolution of the Wisconsin Department of Corrections response to opioid use?
Well, sure. Thanks, Brian, for having us. And this study we did with support, the Wisconsin Policy Forum did with support from Vital Strategies, and we were trying to update a 2021 survey that looked at access to medication for people with opioids use disorder in jails or prisons around the state. And essentially, we did find, as you allude, that the access within Department of Corrections institutions increased sharply. So we went from about a third of DOC facilities, there's about 36 facilities in the state, providing some kind of access to certain individuals in the prison. And that increased to all prisons now provide at least some access to some individuals. And, you know, whereas in 2021, there were only a few dozen individuals that received medications in prison. There was about 150 individuals who received buprenorphine, which is a medication that's associated with a decrease in overdose deaths among those who use it. And about the same number were given naltrexone, which was a big increase from what had happened just 3 years prior to that.
With opioid deaths finally declining in Wisconsin after decades of increases, does this feel like some sort of turning point that we're starting to see with the different access to medications? Is this differences in what facilities are doing? What do you think is driving this?
I think there certainly has been a big shift. Now, it's important to note that you know, we still have roughly 500 to 600 opioid overdose deaths a year in Wisconsin, which is on the order of traffic fatalities. So it's still a very big public health crisis,
sure.
But it has certainly improved a lot. And, you know, one reason we're looking at this specific population of people who are released from incarceration is that they are at an elevated risk of overdose if they go back to using at the same levels they did prior to going behind bars. And, you know, alluding, I didn't really get to all Brian's questions in the previous take there, but we know that the DOC, I mean, I think there are a lot of factors, but one is just the level of deaths and the sort of urgency that society and elected officials feel to address this issue. And then there has been funding through opioid settlements. So with manufacturers of opioids, funding for state and local governments to address the crisis. And then finally, the U.S. Department of Justice also issued guidance in recent years that the Americans for Disabilities Act requires access to these medications to be available. So, I think it's a common, it's no one factor that accounts for the difference, but a combination.
Andy, I wanted to follow up on something Jason just said, because I found this part fascinating. The opioid deaths of the people you studied weren't happening while they were in jail or prison. It was happening when they came out. Can you explain why that is in a little more detail and what the program is doing to combat that?
Sure. So when someone is addicted to opioids and they're in prison, they don't have access to opioids, their tolerance will start to decline. So if they are then released from prison and start using opioids, as Jason said, at the same level that they did prior to incarceration, their body may not be able to handle that amount. And so they're at increased risk of overdose. Also, when someone is going through a withdrawal from opioids, that is often a very painful and very protracted condition. They are in a lot of discomfort. So when they are using opioids in that state to try and make that stop happening, they may not be using at the same pace that they were before. So it's a very dangerous situation for someone to be in.
So the drugs then are to fight the withdrawal and to not build their tolerance back up before they're let out, correct? Is it kind of like the old methadone clinics that we used to hear about?
Yes, and methadone is one of the medications that are sometimes available in Department of Corrections facilities and in jails. So there's methadone and buprenorphine that Jason alluded to. Both of those are what's called agonist medications. They activate the same receptors in the brain that opioids activate, but in a safer and more controlled way. So they can be part of a treatment regimen for people who are gradually coming down from opioid addiction. Now, Trexone, the other medication, is also considered a medication for opioid use disorder. It doesn't activate those same receptors. So where the first two medications address the symptoms of withdrawal and they make them a little bit softer and easier to deal with, now Trexone does not. It just stops people from being able to use opioids and get the effects of opioids.
Jason, you had mentioned that the state received settlement funds, about $200 million, about $780 million of that expected by 2038. And when you look at those numbers, a lot of that money hasn't been allocated yet. And so who is actually deciding how this money gets spent and used? Is it the legislature, the Department of Health, local governments? How is that being broken up right now?
It's all of the above. So, you know, it would be, the state elected and appointed officials have a role to play. And then it's also happening at the level of county government and, you know, county supervisors, county administrators or executives, you know, depending on the structure of the county. So it's really leadership at the state and local level, because there are different funding streams of these opioid settlement dollars that are available. And, you know, I think in some ways, you know, sometimes if you have a local county, a smaller county, they may not have a lot of, they haven't been planning for years in advance on how they're going to spend this money, put it that way, right? And this is one of many avenues that exist to, you know, potentially expand what's happening at the local level and also, you know, improve health and up to and including potentially save lives.
Our guests are Jason Stein. He's president of Wisconsin Policy Forum, and Andy Tisdall. He's a researcher at Wisconsin Policy Forum. Their latest study is Treatment Behind Bars. You can find that at wispolicyforum.org. I guess this question would be for either one of you. This program sounds great because it does cut down on fatalities, but we know once an addict, always an addict. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Are there any numbers on the rate of recidivism when the people who have been treated with these drugs to help with their symptoms in while they're incarcerated, when they get out, how many go back to using full time, or does it work as also a quote unquote cure where people now are going to try to stay off the opioids?
Andy, you want to speak to that first?
Sure. Well, we don't have numbers in this study from Wisconsin. We got our data from a survey of all jails in Wisconsin, as well as DOC facilities. Okay. And while they kept numbers on a great many things, they don't have numbers on the number of people with opioid use disorder who get these medications, they don't have numbers on the total number of people with opioid use disorder entering the facility or the number who get the medications and come back. However, we did do a literature review as part of this study, and we found that several studies indicating that when people receive these medications in jail, they not only have a lower risk of overdose afterwards, but they also have, some studies have found lower recidivism rates and also higher rates of intake into treatment in the community. Oh. So there is some evidence that people are getting these medications and then it is making a lasting change.
That's good news.
So obviously we're seeing this expanded access to treatment in jails and prisons, but there's obviously gaps. And so how do we reach the people in those settings where there are gaps right now based on your research?
Well, so we could talk about counties. Our survey, we reached 65 out of the 71 counties with jails. So there are 72 counties in Wisconsin, 2 counties share a jail, so there's 71 county jails. Of the 65 counties we reached, 53 of them now offer at least some access to these medications compared to 25 3 years ago, so there's been a really big increase. There are still, roughly 8 counties that don't provide any access, and there's a half dozen counties that we didn't get a response from. So, I mean, I think one way that the access can be expanded is, we do have these settlement dollars that we alluded to, and as well, now every county in the state, if they don't offer this, they have at least one neighboring county that does. They have state facilities that do. So there are people with the expertise to do this in all parts of Wisconsin in a way that just wouldn't have been true a few years ago. And so I think the message would be that local officials who would like to do this, but who may find it intimidating because it is, it's a matter of getting individuals with the right certification and training and everything else, that there are both in the private and public sector providers who have done this that they can turn to for help.
Well, another one of the gaps that I found kind of surprising is that, as you mentioned, Jason, not only do some of the counties not have all the medications, but some counties are actually not starting opioid addicts on the programs quick enough, or if they're only going to be in jail for a short time, they're not even doing it then. Is this going to be a legislative question down the road?
Possibly. I mean, it's worth noting that there are a lot of pressures that jails have been under. For example, we've seen jails that have had to increase their pay to guards significantly in order to keep them, as we've sort of had turnover problems in the public and private workforce at large. And so that's been a hit to their budget and other things. And as you allude to, you have people who are coming in and out of jail on a very short period of time, and it may be difficult to start someone on a medication, get the right professional in to see them and so forth if they're in and out in a matter of days or hours. But yeah, I mean, I think it's worth both at the local level as well as the state level thinking about what additional tools might be made available to county officials to be able to, you know, reach as many people as possible.
We have about a minute left, and I'll finish with this one. As we look at success over the next, say, 5 years, what does that look like for the state of Wisconsin? Is it even less death, fewer people entering addiction, better recovery programs? What does it look like going forward for us?
I mean, I think there's probably likely to be more access to these medications just given how the last several years have gone. And we have been on a trend that if it continues, we'd see fewer deaths. And I think really the question is how low can we go, right? Because again, you know, getting down to 100 or 200 further deaths would be great, but there'd still be 300 people a year dying in the state of this, you know, this scourge. So it's really about how low can we make it go.
And if you want to get more information, go to wispolicyforum.com. Thanks again to Jason Stein and Andy Tisdale from Wisconsin Policy Forum. Gentlemen, very enlightening. Thanks very much. We'll be back with more. It's the Civic Media.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Now back to more of Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. You are listening to the Civic Media Network. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Have you ever had a chance encounter with a celebrity? We would love to hear it. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. This one, I saw this story. I immediately thought
love
of
it.
Frank and how jealous he would be about this. A young man from De Pere is in the news because he had a run-in, not only a run-in, but he photobombed Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce.
I love it.
Frank, what would you do to be so close to Taylor Swift that you could photobomb her? he would plot.
He's
he'd
coming
be
in.
Sweating. He'd be...
I would not care.
Stop it.
No, I'm kidding.
Would not I was care. Gonna yeah, say, right. Really?
Would not care.
I've met celebrities before in a working
well,
manner.
Well, sure. You're
and
have.
I've never been.
All ones
never
I'm
fanboyed?
Of, by the way.
No, I think the only person I've really fanboyed over was Patrick Kane, the hockey player.
Okay. All right.
Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews was like, that I couldn't believe. But like yeah. celebrities, like musicians, they're usually pretty chill.
Yeah.
They're either really chill or they're a nightmare and you just stay away.
Yeah, you don't want anything
to do with
them. Have
you ever had an embarrassing, either any of you had an embarrassing encounter before we talk about this kid from De Pere?
With a celebrity?
Or done something stupid when you met a celebrity?
Trying to think.
Like, yes.
I'm sure. I'm sure there was. I probably didn't realize it at the
time.
Hold
on. I do. I have a story.
All right.
It wasn't with the celebrity. It was with the record rep or their management
team. Oh, yeah.
They didn't put enough cocaine in the album before they gave it to you to play?
No. Who was it? We had somebody come in that worked for Disney, was on a Disney Channel movie and then starred in a Netflix movie, and I can't remember. She was in Descendants, and I can't remember her name.
Ashley Tisdale?
No,
I'm just
no.
We're just throwing out Disney.
But like
stars.
her manager came up to me and was like, "Good to see you again," and like went to like dap me up, and I'm like, "What are we doing? You're like a 60-year-old white guy."
Right on, brother.
And he was like, "Frank, why are you being weird about this?" I was like, "One, I've never met you before. Two, what is this? What about me gives off that vibe?" It was such a weird interaction.
Had you met him? Did it? I'm waiting
never.
For the. And it turned out it was my uncle.
Never, never. It was like my first like media thing that I was coordinating in Chicago because I had worked in Ohio
sure.
before that. Yeah. So we had never crossed paths
right.
ever. It was weird.
Quickly before we share our other stories, let me just tell you this. Paul Janowitz, he's from De Pere. He was at the iHeart Music Awards
mm-hmm.
the other day, March 26th. He was there. So he's there as a seat filler, which is a job that if you're in Los mm-hmm. Angeles, they hire people just to come. Well, so like if I go to the bathroom or, you know, Diddy needs to go replenish the baby oil, somebody sits in his chair so it looks nice and full. So he's sitting three rows behind Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift. And they had just announced their engagement. Oh, it's a big deal. They stand up to get a picture and he sees his moment and he moves right into the middle of them. This picture then goes viral. It's everywhere. All the news stations. It's all the photo services. And his cousin's or his uncle's wife, his cousin's wife, somebody sees him on TV and sends it to him because it was on the Chiefs Facebook page.
Love that.
And the comments were like, the guy photobombing them is the best. So now he's going to use it for Christmas cards and all kinds of things.
But
Frank, I knew you would appreciate his reply to the comment. He said, it's me. Hi, I'm the problem. It's me.
Amazing.
That's
amazing.
How
much trouble did he get into?
Nothing, because he moved over and there was a gap and he sat.
Yeah.
He moved over and sat in his seat, but he sat up tall and he just was smiling as big as could be.
Okay.
He wasn't doing anything obnoxious.
It was just,
if you looked past him, there he is, like, gritted from ear to ear like the Cheshire Cat going, ha-ha.
This was a big night for all eyes were on Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce because it was the first appearance they had made together at an awards event like this since basically becoming engaged. So it was a really big event for them to be at. Honestly, let's be realistic. If Paul hadn't responded with, it's me, hi, I'm the problem, it's me, I would think twice about his Taylor Swift's fandom because feels like the only appropriate response in that moment.
Maybe he's not even a fan. He just sees Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce, and like, I'm getting in this picture.
Yeah.
Can we, real quick, about Taylor and Travis?
Oh, please.
Do you have a hot take for us?
How lame that that's your first award show that you're showing up to. If I'm Travis Kelce, I'm pissed off. I'd be like, dude,
well, he had a season.
Can't we go to the Oscars or something?
She didn't go to the Oscars.
That's what I mean. Yeah. Why couldn't we go to the Oscars?
Because she's a recording artist. She doesn't have a song nominated. Why the hell would she be
to tell me, Travis? Or look at me and tell me Taylor Swift couldn't go to the Oscars.
Well, I'm sure she could. But why would she
be
there?
She wouldn't have really good seats. She would.
She would. Yes, she would. No.
Even some of the people who are nominated for major awards are sitting farther back. Taylor Swift has no business. I know, but she doesn't fit with that. Grammys front row, 100%, Taylor Swift. iHeartMedia, I think this may be a little sour grapes on somebody's part.
I swear to God, myself, look, Travis Kelce's a Midwestern guy just like myself, all of us here.
Right.
If I had a famous girl, the most famous pop star in the world, and we're like, we're going to go out as a couple to an award show, and I go, where are we going?
But
and
he loves
she
music.
Responds with a Radio Music Awards. I'm livid.
But he also
but she's
loves
going
music.
To that. Do you want her to go by herself? They've already announced
no,
that they're
I'll
engaged.
Go
then
with
the scuttlebutt
her.
Is.
They didn't go to the Why couldn't we go to the Grammys? Why couldn't we go to the Emmys? Why couldn't we go to the Oscars?
Because they weren't Facebook official. I know you're upset. Relax. Slow your roll.
I am getting riled up, Mr. Plowking.
I didn't think our first official argument here on Daybreak would be over Taylor Swift.
I did.
It's more
I
so about
did.
Why.
Frank called me a dummy
look,
about it
I'm
yesterday.
Just saying.
I knew
go
it was
going to
be over something trivial and silly. Hey, but kudos. Kudos to and he was also sitting next to gold medal figure skater Alyssa Liu.
Oh, I love that.
So
for
kudos,
him.
Kudos to our man from De Pere, Paul Janowitz. We got to get out of here. It's
we
time.
Do.
Tomorrow's Friday. Be careful. It's almost time. This is Daybreak. I'm Brian Noonan. She's Jamie Martinson. This is the Civic Media.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.